Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument, United States v. Ozuna. Mr. Brindley.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, my name is Beau Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Modesto Ozuna. The first issue that I would like to discuss this morning is the court's decision to reopen the evidence in a suppression hearing after judgment had already been entered on that issue.
Well, not judgment.
Well, in a sense.
Not the right word.
Judgment's not the right word. A decision, a ruling.
Right word, okay.
A ruling had been entered on the suppression motion.
Can't that be reexamined during the entire course of the presentation of evidence?
I'm sorry?
Couldn't that be done during the entire course of the presentation of evidence, during a trial?
Yes. During a trial, it absolutely could.
Well, then what difference does that make in this case?
Because in this instance, what happens here is the important thing is that there was no reason given, not in the briefing here or at the time of the motion from the government to reopen the evidence, for why it should be allowed to put on more evidence that was already in its possession under its control. And by allowing the government to do that without a justification, what happens is the predictability and finality of the pretrial process is deteriorated, certainly, and it's supplanted by an uncertainty and an arbitrariness. Neither the district court nor the government provided any justification for why the evidence should be reopened for the presentation of evidence that was in the control and possession and at the disposal of the government during the initial hearing. Mr. Ozuna only requests a very narrow finding here.
Well, what is there prejudice to you or what? What are you complaining about?
Is there absolutely there is prejudice. At the initial hearing, the evidence was suppressed, certainly.
But I mean, you were deprived of an opportunity to present evidence or what?
Not that we were deprived of an opportunity to present.
What was the prejudice?
The prejudice was that the wrong decision was reached as a result of the prison.
So you can quarrel with a decision. What is the prejudice in the reopening? How did that, you know, interfere with your making your case?
The reopening of the suppression evidence interfered with Mr. Ozuna's right to have his pretrial motion decided
and have his pretrial motion have finality. That's circular and it's not responsive to my question. How is he prejudiced?
Mr. Ozuna is prejudiced when the evidence is reopened.
No, look, listen to me. In what way was his ability to make his case, to present evidence, to contest evidence, in what way was that impaired by the reopening? What had he lost by what opportunity to present evidence, you know, how is he in a procedural way harmed by this?
Mr. Ozuna was harmed when the evidence was reopened and previously available evidence was then put forth. He's harmed because, for one, the evidence that was presented after that was evidence he hadn't known about previously and hadn't had the chance to examine previously, and it ended up that the documents that were presented were damaged and he couldn't have them examined properly by an expert. And all of that happened as a result of the government's failure.
Was the damage happened as a result of the government's not having presented this evidence initially?
Yes, because what happened was we had a rush to get this done after the government didn't like the outcome. And in that rush, the documents were damaged and Mr. Ozuna was unable to have his examiner look at them.
Would you not interrupt me?
I apologize.
Damaged by whom?
They were damaged when fingerprints...
By whom?
By agents working for the U.S. government that were handling the documents and examining them for fingerprints.
Well, why do you... And you think the damage was somehow because of the reopening?
Had it been presented at the initial hearing, had the government presented all of it at the beginning as part of its evidence, then there would have been no need for a rush that damaged the documents. All of it would have been presented, and he would have had the ability to know about it and look at it in an unrushed fashion.
Wait, you go so fast. Examine it in an unrushed fashion. I don't follow you. I thought your complaint was the agents were rushed and they damaged?
They damaged the documents.
What damaged, by the way?
They damaged the question document with a signature on it was dipped in a solvent. And the record...
Damage to me.
The record makes, well, that's a, you're looking at a copy. The record makes clear, and from...
What's the damage?
The damage was testified to
by... What is the damage?
The damage occurred because the defense expert... I'm trying to answer your question.
You never listen to me. What is the damage? Not what caused it. What is the damage? What happened to the document?
The ink on the signature was damaged such that the defense expert could not perform all of the tests and could not make determinations about it because it had been damaged, and that defense expert testified to that at the second hearing after the evidence was reopened.
Okay, thanks.
And with respect to the Daubert issue, I think the briefing was exhaustive.
Why didn't you put copies of this signature in your brief?
Copies of the signature?
Signatures, the four signatures.
Because what we had argued in the brief was that the evidence shouldn't be reopened. We didn't put them in there because we didn't think that was relevant to the legal issue that we were raising.
They look all alike to me.
Well, the district court found that they didn't look alike to him when he first examined them.
I don't understand that. They look all alike.
Well, nonetheless, the legal issue did not require looking at the signatures.
You heard it, a picture is worth a thousand words? You haven't heard that.
Perhaps it may be, but if the picture is not relevant to the question, then it's...
I think it's quite relevant. Because what Judge Grady said was that with the aid of the experts, he was able to look more carefully at the signatures, and he thought they looked alike.
That is correct.
What's wrong with that?
With respect to the Daubert issue, what's wrong with it is he didn't ever examine the reliability of the principles underlying those opinions.
He said that he wasn't relying on them as experts, but he found that their explanation helped him to focus on particular features of the signature. So what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it is that it is Mr. Ozuna's position that he relied on the very things he said he would not.
That a judge or a jury cannot compare two signatures without an expert witness?
No, they can, but when experts are put on, the principles they're relying on need to be examined.
I understand you. If they don't need an expert in order to be able to testify or decide, make a finding that these are the same signatures, why can't they use an expert the way Judge Grady did, which is say, I'm not going to rely on your conclusion, but you can tell me, to look at things more carefully.
Because when experts are putting on their opinions, it is different because they're using these principles and methodologies. And I've gone into my rebuttal time. I'd like to make one point about my third issue before I have stop here. And that is this. The first trial that Mr. Ozuna had was remarkably different from the second. At the first trial, I was able to present argument of active agent manufacturing and fabrication of evidence and support it with evidence.
I don't understand your manufacturing. You think this fellow Lumpkin somehow engineered a forgery in Chicago? Is that your theory?
He was directing the operation from McAllen, and the agents in Chicago did the traffic stop. However, it's my position that argument
was he superior to this fellow in Chicago?
They were equals.
The alleged forger?
They were equals. I don't know who
not
the forger was.
Or anything.
No, but the point
so
that
you
I
think he told this agent in Chicago to forge the signature? Is that your theory?
That's not the point of
no,
the
I'm
argument.
I'm asking you, is that your theory?
I don't think that's relevant to the question.
My question is irrelevant? You can, but you still have to answer it.
Your Honor, do I think that he was...
Look,
I think that they
just
worked together.
Answer my
yes.
question.
Yes, I think that they
you
worked together.
You told this fellow, the agent in Chicago, to forge the document.
Yes, I think that they worked together, Your Honor.
You're not answering my
yes,
question.
Yes, I think that's correct, Your Honor.
That he told this Chicago agent to forge the document.
I think that's supported by the evidence, which indicates at the first trial
so that's
that
what
he...
That's what you think.
Yes.
Think, Okay.
That he put pressure on witnesses to provide false testimony. What I think is that Mr. Ozuna should have been able to support the argument at his second trial with the specific instances that were allowed at his first trial, and that was disallowed by the court in a systematic way that prevented him from presenting a complete defense to which he had a due process right pursuant to the Holmes case. And with that, Your Honor, I thank you.
All right, Ms. Schneider.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Maggie Schneider. I represent the United States in this matter. None of the purported errors raised on appeal by Mr. Ozuna were an abuse of discretion that provide a basis for the reversal of his conviction.
Was it clear in the initial suppression hearing that the handwriting was going to be a key issue?
It was not, Your Honor. Certainly, the issue of whether Mr. Ozuna consented was an issue, which would necessarily wrap in the fact of whether he signed the form. However, the briefing focused on the fact that there would be evidence from an agent and from Mr. Ozuna, and that was, in fact, the evidence presented at the hearing. It wasn't really until the judge started making his decision that he considered the testimony and said, basically, it's a wash. I can't decide who's telling the truth. Then he himself looked to the signature and did his own analysis of whether he thought there was a match.
So that's why the government didn't present expert testimony in that first hearing?
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't think the government anticipated that the handwriting issue would be such an issue, and that the analysis had not been done. That's noted in the government's brief to the court when it asked for reconsideration of the suppression hearing. So at that, once the ruling was rendered in the way that it was, the government had the analysis done and then moved the court to reopen the hearing so that it could present this evidence. And that reopening was not an abuse of discretion. This was something that the government hadn't anticipated, and the court was certainly within the district court's discretion to do this and hear this evidence and give it a second look. And that's what was done here. As to the Daubert issue, the district court did not take the expert testimony as gospel and just rely on it. As has already been discussed, the district court basically took the evidence as information from a trained observer in the field and used it to give his own second look to the signature. And if you look at the way that he did his ultimate analysis, he gave a lengthy oral ruling on why he was changing his mind, essentially. And when he relied on something that the experts had told him, he backed it up with why he thought that made sense, and that was the way in which he made reliability findings. For example, he said the experts said that a person doesn't always sign a document the same way, and then the court looked at the known signatures. There were numerous known signatures, and the question signatures noted his own examples of the fact that does happen, and then said, because I see that this in real life does happen, I'm going to credit or believe take credit of the fact of what the experts told me about this. And then the court did its own comparison of the signatures, which you'll see was not based very much at all on what the experts had told him in terms of deciding that there was a match.
What is this damage to the signature on the disputed signature? What is that about?
What Mr. Brindler was talking about was the fact that after the opinion on the suppression hearing, the government quickly submitted this document to the lab to have the analysis done. After the handwriting analysis was done, it was also processed for fingerprinting. The fingerprinting analysis involved dipping it in a solution or applying a solution in some way, and that may have affected the ink on the document. And I think that the defense expert noted that she couldn't tell if there were pen lifts in the signature because the breaks in the ink could have been from the loss of the ink from the processing, or they could have been. So that was really the only issue there. And I don't think that issue, I think, would have been present regardless of when the analysis was done. Had the government done this analysis before the first hearing, it probably would have also done the fingerprint analysis and the same damage would have occurred. So I don't think that's prejudice that flows only from the fact that this was done after the first suppression hearing and that there was then a second suppression hearing. So the district court properly gave a limited consideration of this expert testimony, did its own analysis, and concluded that there was no forgery, and that decision was not an abuse of discretion. Finally, as to this issue of the evidence, there was no abuse of discretion by the court in excluding this testimony under Rule 403. It involved an agent who didn't testify in the second trial, who was in a different city, and the court properly exercised its discretion and determined that it was too far afield and would be a waste of time under Rule 403 and excluded it.
I had a question about something a bit different, and it was this. Couldn't it have been significant for the jury to hear an agent testify that in his training and in his experience, truck drivers may not know of the contraband in their trucks, despite following all of the rules and despite checking their produce, locking their trucks? Why should that potential circumstance be considered so self-evident, as the district court found, as to disallow that testimony?
Well, the district court's ruling on that issue had two bases. One was that there was a significant factual difference between that testimony that Agent Lumpkin would have given, which is basically what Your Honor just said, and what was actually the case in this case, where the cocaine was not a small, I think what Agent Lumpkin would have said, four boxes hidden amongst all legitimate loads that the driver may not have seen. Here, there were more boxes than that, and Mr. Ozuna had no paperwork for the load that was the cover load for the cocaine. And the court found that a significant factual difference that would have made Agent Lumpkin's testimony basically on an issue that wasn't what was before the jury.
Your argument makes my point even more, I'm trying to think of a word. I think you're making my point for me with your argument.
Well, Your Honor, what I'm trying to say is that what Agent Lumpkin would have been allowed to opine about could have caused juror confusion, because his opinion as to the circumstances in which truck drivers don't know was not this, or might not know, and he said it was very limited circumstances, was not the facts of this case that had been presented to the jury.
Yeah, so, but, you know, Lumpkin had made this prior statement. Why shouldn't the jury be allowed to hear that prior statement?
Well, it was lay opinion that that came in the previous trial without, I believe it was without an objection. It just sort of came in and it wasn't highlighted at that trial.
Constantly uses police officers as expert witnesses on drug, you know, on the methods of drug dealers and their practices, their vocabulary, and so on. So he could have been an expert on transportation of drugs in trucks, right?
It's possible. The issue of whether he would have qualified as an expert in that field wasn't explored.
Your point. Now, in his that statement from the prior trial, did he talk about paperwork? Did he mention paperwork?
I think the comment was something to the effect of, they're doing everything right, they've got their lock on their truck, they're checking their loads at each stop, and somehow this four boxes of cocaine ends up intermingled amongst a legitimate load, which is a different scenario than what were the facts here, where the facts presented at trial were that there was an entirely separate stop by Mr. Ozuna at this truck stop where the cover load and cocaine was loaded, for which he had no paperwork. So it wasn't a legitimate stop by a truck driver at a produce place where he gets a load and the cocaine traffickers have arranged for a small amount of cocaine to be hidden in there that he doesn't know about.
That testimony was did not involve this defendant?
That testimony was in the first trial of this case, so it did involve Mr. Ozuna. And it came in.
He was giving it as an example of the being locked, padlocked, and having the paperwork versus what was the case here?
I don't recall if it was exactly a comparison of that case and this case. I think it may have been, but I'm not certain, so I don't want to say that for sure. But I do think that was the circumstances under which it came in. But in any event, given the factual differences and the fact that it was a lay opinion that the judge thought the jury could come to on their own, and in fact was argued as an inference to the jury by the defense, the fact that he might not have known, it wasn't an abuse of discretion for the court to have excluded this. And certainly, to the extent there was any error in excluding this testimony, it was harmless. There was extensive evidence of Mr. Ozuna's guilt presented to the jury. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Brindley, how much time does he have?
I believe I've exhausted my time.
Well, do you want another minute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, just to clarify the point about the testimony given about truck drivers not knowing about the loads, mm-hmm. that testimony, I believe, was actually given at a suppression hearing where Agent Lumpkin testified under oath that that was possible and that was his experience. And when you combine that testimony with the other evidence that was excluded pursuant to Rule 403 in this case, it comes to a point, in my view, where Rule 403 is systematically used to deprive Mr. Ozuna of a complete defense that included both that information from Agent Lumpkin and information from defense witnesses who would have testified that Agent Lumpkin personally threatened them to give false testimony to try to validate a confession that Mr. Ozuna maintained was a false confession. And with that, Your Honor, I think...
Wouldn't it be hard for you to both attacking Lumpkin as a criminal, really, and also relying on his testimony about the practices of truckers?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so, because his practical experience, I think, would be one thing. What he did specifically in this case is something very, very different. And if he was actually making those threats that those two witnesses would have testified to, that was relevant because that was about Mr. Ozuna. That was about the very confession that was at the heart of this case and was claimed to be fabricated. In addition, there was another witness who stated that DEA agents fabricated a DEA 6 form, indicating that he identified Mr. Ozuna when he did not. All of that is clearly relevant evidence, and when you exclude it all, you've excluded all of the instances.
What was the question asked him at the suppression hearing to which he gave the answer about some truck drivers not knowing they were carrying drugs?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I asked him the question, but I don't recall what led to that answer.
Okay, well,
thank you,
Mr. Brindley, and thank you for accepting the appointment and your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.